supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and coming up later in the show, we will discuss deer. It's no joke. I've already run over a dead one, hit one with my car, and now a listener wants to know what to do about trees that have been debarked by young bucks rubbing their newly grown antlers against the trees. Doing a lot of damage this year. We'll see what we can do to fix it after we take lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Sandra, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there, Mike. How are you today?
I am just ducky, Sandra. Thank you for asking. How is Sandra doing?
I'm doing well.
And where is Sandra doing well?
Middletown, Delaware.
Okay. What can we do for Sandra in the small wonder?
I just dug up most of my cana, and I wanted to know the best way to store them over the winter.
Now, you mean you grew canna lilies, right? The big dramatic tropical plants that just grow unbelievably fast in the season. Did you get lots of nice flowers this year?
Many, many.
Yeah, they're a remarkable and underutilized landscape plant. I don't see them as much as you would expect to. They really put on an amazing amount of height in a single season. And what people with limited sun don't realize is you can grow them in almost deep shade, and you'll still get those giant, dramatic, multicolored leaves. You just won't get the flowers on top. So you waited until frost kind of blasted the plants up top, and then you dug up the rhizomes underground?
Yes, and I did it last year and divided them up and gave them to many of my neighbors. So our neighborhood is looking very beautiful with many red cannas around.
Yeah.
Am I saying it right? Canna, you say?
I've been told it's canna lilies, yes.
Okay.
One of the things about gardening is you learn so much of it from either books or other gardeners, so you're never really sure. But yeah, we grew them for the flower show a couple of years in a row, so I'm pretty sure it's canna lilies. But
okay.
Don't worry about that. Did you wait till frost had blackened the above ground plants?
Most of it, yeah.
Okay, good. Most people don't know that. These are called summer blooming bulbs. Obviously, they're frost tender. They're not going to survive in the ground over the winter in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, other places like that, any place north of us. But that doesn't mean they get X's over their eyes at the sign of the first frost. It's actually good to let them turn black up top, because that concentrates the sugars. That sends the sugars running back down to the root system and actually gives them more energy to survive the winter. So the classic way to do this is get a cardboard box and fill it with milled peat moss, like from those big bricks at the garden center. Mist it the tiniest amount, not a lot. And then close up the box and put it someplace like a cool basement where it's going to stay around 50, 55 degrees, not get hot, not get cold.
See, that's the problem. My basement is heated and my garage is not. So the garage gets just about as cold as it gets outside. So last year I actually put them in styrofoam, but I'm not sure if, I mean, most of them survived, but I wasn't sure if that was the right thing to do.
Is the garage attached or detached?
It's attached, and I did put them against the back wall.
Okay. I think you're still safe there. What I would do is follow that same plan, cardboard, peat moss, mist it. And then if you have, like, blocks of foam or something like that, lean it up against the front. You know, put as much as you can, pile newspaper over top, maybe old carpeting, just to make sure that there isn't a lot of temperature swing.
Oh, good. So then I should not use the styrofoam containers then.
Well, what was in the styrofoam containers?
Nothing. I bought them to put the rhizomes in.
So you just put them in there butt naked?
Yes, I may have put some peat in there. I can't remember, but most of them did survive, but I was thinking that maybe putting holes in them would be a good idea. But I'm happy to do the cardboard boxes and cover them up, so I'm good with that.
Yeah, my thinking is they want a little bit of breathing. They want to be able to respirate. They don't want to be locked inside something.
That's so, what I was afraid of.
Yeah, just the cardboard and the peat. There's going to be a little bit of air transfer, but not a lot. And then just throw old carpeting or maybe an old winter coat that you don't use anymore or an old blanket or something like that over top of it. Just try to keep the temperature as constant as possible. They'll be fine.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right. My pleasure. Good luck, Sandra.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Nick, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
I am just ducky today, Nick. How are you, sir?
I'm pretty good as well. Thank you.
And where is Nick pretty good?
Oxford, PA.
Oxford, like in Oxford Valley or what?
No, like southeast of Philadelphia near the Maryland border.
Oh, okay. Very good. Nice area down there, actually. What can we do for Nick in Oxford?
Well, I just bought a house in June, and I inherited 3 peach trees, which yielded a lot of fruit this summer, but they were like covered in this kind of fungus, which I kind of did a cursory Google search of and figured out it was, I think it's brown rot.
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure what to do about it.
Yeah, well, you're probably one of the few listeners who Googled something and got the right answer. Peaches are very difficult to grow. They're difficult to grow organically. They're even difficult to grow conventionally. They're very fragile compared to other crops. So how big are these trees?
They're pretty big. They're like 15 to 20 feet each, I would say.
Okay. And are you prepared to take care of them in response to maybe getting some peaches?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I value them. They seem to yield a lot of peaches before the rot set in. So
yes, that's one of the problems, actually. Here's what we're going to do. In the spring, after new growth appears, you're going to start removing branches. You're going to remove branches that are growing straight up, and you're going to remove branches from areas that have too many branches that are crowded. You want to make some good airflow inside the tree. Don't worry about taking off too much. Peach trees are just way too full. They grow way too fast. Mm-hmm. You should take off about a third of the branches. Don't be shy here.
Okay.
And then, by the way, bring those branches inside and enjoy those blossoms. You know, fill your house and give them to your friends to have these incredible displays of blossoming branches. It's amazing and it's free.
Okay.
So then when the little peaches start forming, go out there with 5-gallon buckets and take off at least 2 baby peaches for every peach you leave on the tree. Take off any misshapen ones. If you can see them, if any have little holes in them already, take those off because they've already been pierced by an insect. But again, don't be afraid to take too many peaches off. Peach trees set like 4 or 5 times as many fruits as they can really carry through to, quote, fruition. So oddly enough, the more peaches you, quote, thin out at the beginning of the season, the better quality you'll have.
Okay.
Then when you're done your thinning, I want you to have a solution of Surround at hand, S-U-R-R-O-U-N-D. This is a clay spray. You mix it with water, you put it in a sprayer, and you spray it over the trees. It provides a physical barrier against pests and diseases. There's very few things that can prevent brown rot in terms of sprays. So Surround is one of the most effective, and it's completely non-toxic. It's literally just a clay. It's like you're rubbing dirt on them so that nothing can get to them.
Okay.
Lots of airflow, lots of thinning of the young peaches, lots of sunshine, no food whatsoever. Do not give them any kind of fertilizer. Don't mulch them with wood. Do mulch them with 2 inches of compost. That'll prevent disease from splashing back up at them from the orchard floor. You're still going to see the occasional peach with brown rot. Get it off the tree instantly. Put a plastic bag over your hand. Get the peach in your hand. Pull the bag over top of it. Twist it and trash it. Because if you leave rotten peaches on the tree, they'll infect the rest of the peaches. If you do this all really well, you'll get more peaches than you know what to do with.
Gotcha. Okay, so I shouldn't use any, like, fungicide or organicide or anything. I was seeing kind of mixed reviews on that.
Organicide. That's an interesting concept. Would that kill organic gardeners? No, there's fungicides. Fungicides are really ineffective. The brown rot fungus is tremendously strong, and the peaches are soft and weak. So what you really want to do is do all the cultural things. Make sure the tree is open. Matter of fact, if that tree grows rapidly after you prune it and you look at it and you can't really see any spot for airflow, don't be afraid to give it a second pruning late in the spring. These trees just grow too many leaves and too many peaches, and your job is to keep things artificially thin and open.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the advice.
All right. Take care, man.
You too.
All right. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of you men out there that a guy who brings holly into the house at this time of year will rule the roost for the coming season, unless the female of the household brings ivy indoors first. But don't go changing the front locks until you can run out and buy a pair of pruners just yet, because we'll be right back to try and deter dangerous deer and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, deer are all over the roadways. They're all over our azaleas. And young bucks are rubbing their antlers against the bark of young trees, effectively destroying them. What can we do to protect our plants? We'll tell you after lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Cindy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Cindy. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And where is Cindy fine?
I am fine in Center Hall, Pennsylvania.
Where is Center Hall?
Just outside of State College.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yeah, we have a lot of listeners out there in the middle of the state. I had a great visit to State College this spring. A lot of fun. What can we do for Cindy?
Well, I have a question about geraniums. I had overwintered a couple of rather large geraniums from last winter and brought them out and they were kind of gangly and everything. So I decided to chop them down, and I got 30 cuttings and made 30 little geraniums in 3-inch pots. They sat on the back patio in dappled shade and did well. And then I brought them out to the front of the house where they got a lot more full sun. But now I still have, I lost 10. So I have 20 little geraniums in 3-inch pots. But now, you know, now they're inside. I also brought inside 3 other real large geraniums. So my question is, what should I do with them over the winter? Should I try to combine them into larger pots? Should I just keep trying to get them going into the, in the 3-inch pots?
What kind of conditions do you have for them indoors? How do you keep them over winter?
Right now, they are just in a big picture window that is southwest facing.
Oh, that's nice. How are they doing?
Okay. They're blooming beautifully. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the color, so I try to keep them going.
Geraniums are very hardy. I mean, you live in an area with very cold winters, so it wouldn't be smart to leave them outside. But with a little bit of protection, these things can live for decades. I remember when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine, one reader in a similar climate to yours wrote and told us that she just took them into her garage and turned them upside down, hanging from the rafters for the winter, and planted them fresh in the spring, and they came back. Other people with any kind of a horticultural window like yours, I think would be crazy not to have them in the window and blooming. 3 inches is tiny, so if you got the room and you got the energy, and especially if you got the containers and you got a fresh bag of potting soil, I would definitely pot them up into even slightly larger containers, or if you want to combine a bunch of them into a big container. But they're going to get root-bound. They're probably root-bound already. And I think they'll do better for you if you put them up into containers like twice as big.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, but definitely I have begonias, bedding plant begonias, that are much more frost tender than yours, and I just grow them all in containers, and I bring them inside every September, and I put them in every windowsill that I have. And the advantage that I have is my plants never wanted a lot of sun to begin with, unlike yours. So I can have them in a window that just gets moderate light, and they bloom for me all winter long. And it just changes the whole prospect of the house, doesn't it, when you see all these blooming plants in the windowsills?
Yeah, I love the bullseye cherry. It's just such a really bright, cheery color.
So I think for sure what you want to do to encourage the plants is pot them up into bigger containers. Just do you have a good soil-free mix around?
I'm sure I can find some.
Well, you got to be careful. This time of year, garden centers are mostly selling inflatable Homer Simpson Santa Clauses. So, you know, and you want a nice, clean potting soil. You don't want any of this junk with water-holding crystals or chemical fertilizer. Really, what you want is a nice mix of peat, perlite, vermiculite, compost, you know, maybe some worm casting, stuff like that. But try to avoid that. The chemical companies have tried to take over the potting soils and the seed starting soil. So it gets harder and harder to find clean stuff. But the plants really thrive on growing in a soil-free mix in containers indoors.
Well, great. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck. Take care.
Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Great.
And where is Bob great?
In Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh, it's supposed to be so beautiful. Actually, I was there once, and the climate was just so mild. It was a little dry, but a beautiful area and a beautiful climate.
Very beautiful and real friendly people. It's a really lovely part of the world.
All right. What can we do for Bob in Santa Fe?
I live in a condo community where there are these large pots. I mean, they're really large, and I've been planting them in kind of a public place so that the community can enjoy them. Mm-hmm. And in these pots, I started some calendrinia last spring. And it's a beautiful plant. It's succulent, and it has these wonderful, very long, stringy stems with bright fuchsia flowers on the ends of them. And it blooms constantly. It's extremely pretty, but I'm thinking it's not going to make it very much further into the winter.
It's a fabulous rock garden plant. It's called rock purslane. And I think the reason it's called, quote, rock purslane is people love to plant it in little rock gardens. And if I remember correctly, your climate is perfect for this because, as you probably know, most succulents are dry climate plants. They can store a lot of water inside themselves. And again, if I'm remembering correctly, Santa Fe is legendary for having a very low humidity.
Extremely low humidity, and that's part of the reason why it's so nice here.
Yeah, yeah. And how many winters have you spent there?
This will be my second winter in Santa Fe.
And how cold did it get last winter?
In the daytime, it tends to be, you know, it might start out and at sunrise around 25 degrees, 29 degrees, but then it rises up to the 30s and 40s. And as the sun is shining, you really feel it because of the high altitude. So it's really warm.
Ah, okay. So you are at altitude?
7,200 feet.
Oh, okay. That's significant.
Yeah.
So your rock purslane is only one season. It hasn't gone through a winter yet. And you can get snow in Santa Fe, right, because of your elevation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we got snow last year on April 29th. I mean, that was the best snow of the winter.
Yeah, see, one of the issues I have here is it's up in pots. Are there any areas low to the ground where you could take some cuttings and plant them?
Yeah, I think I could do that.
The possibility of the plant itself surviving is going to be greatly improved if it can be planted in the ground. This is a plant that was made to take cuttings from. So what I would do, I would leave the bulk of the plants in their pots. I would take some cuttings from them now, and I would root them in protected areas, like next to the house, next to a wall, something like that. And how about you go to a garden center, you get some just basic plastic pots and a nice bag of seed starting mix, a soil-free mix, and you take some cuttings and you grow them on your windowsill or in your kitchen window over the winter.
Okay, yeah, I could try that.
And then for the plants in pots, if you get a really cold night coming up, you can go out and buy material that's called floating row cover, which is just a spun polyester blanket-like material, and toss it over the pots. Or if you have an old sheer curtain somewhere, something like that, an old bed sheet. Not a blanket, not a tarp, not plastic of any kind, but just something to keep frost from settling on the plants. The basic genus of this plant, the frost hardiness varies greatly with the species, and some of them are quite frost hardy. They come from Chile, but they also come from the Andes. They come from high up in the mountains. So you're not.
I've seen them growing like weeds in some people's front yards, you know, where they're not maintaining them at all. Although I don't think it's the same. It's a Calandrinia,
right?
But it's not like these are Calandrinia spectabilis.
Right. You may want to grow a more frost-hardy variety if these prove to be a lot of trouble. But the good news is you can find frost-hardy varieties very easily, and your climate almost duplicates their natural climate up in the Andes. So take some cuttings, put some plants in the ground, put some plants in pots in your house, cover the containers on cold nights, and I bet you they're all going to survive.
Great.
All right?
Okay.
All right, good luck and enjoy the beautiful views out there, man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, you take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jody, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. I enjoy your show.
Well, thank you very much, Jody. Where are you?
I live in Sinking Valley, Pennsylvania.
Huh. Well, I know Sinking Spring. That's on the famed Road to Nowhere that eventually takes you to Reading. Where is Sinking Valley?
Well, if Pennsylvania had a belly button, that would be Sinking Valley. It's just a little bit south of Central.
Okay, okay. Very good. Down below State College, say?
Yeah, sort of between Tyrone and Altoona.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. And is the valley sinking?
It really is. It really is. There's karst topography, so the valley really, truly is sinking. We got a lot of sinkholes here.
All right. What can we do? Talk fast, Jody, before the valley sinks any further.
Well, I am suffering from eco-guilt, Mike. I planted a beautiful butterfly bush in my garden, and it grew, and the good thing about it is it just is a nectar host plant for this huge array of butterflies, you know, including the great spangled fritterary. Isn't that fun to say?
Yeah.
And just monarchs and painted ladies and just all kinds of butterflies and moths, including the sphinx moth, not so fun to say, and this enormous display of native bees. They're just so beautiful. They're just bedazzling in their little bitty colors.
Yep.
So what a great host of pollinators. But on the bad side, my environmentalist friends tell me it's not only not native, it's an invasive species. And let me tell you what I did, Mike. It had babies. And I planted them.
Uh-huh.
I planted 7 in all, including in my newly formed wildlife sanctuary.
Uh-huh. We're calling the police on another line, Jody. Don't worry about it. Come and get her, coppers.
Oh, and then to make things worse, some of these accidentally slipped out of my pocket and planted themselves along with a lot of milkweed seeds.
Yeah, seed bombing, the green gorilla's favorite trick.
Yeah, so that's what I did, Mike. And, you know, I just want your opinion. On the one hand, this is a wonderful nectar plant for pollinators. On the other hand, it's invasive species. So should I just hang up and run screaming out into my where I planted them with a hoe and kill all these baby butterfly bushes?
I have great respect for people who want to preserve native plants, who want to try to protect them and make sure they thrive. The big issue, however, is the world that these native plants were native in doesn't exist anymore. It's like telling people you can't drive cars because cars obviously do pollute and everything like that, and we need to all go back to being on horseback or bicycles. I always got a twinge whenever people started making lists of things that were to live and things that were to die. Nature has a way of kind of choosing which plants are going to thrive in this environment. And some native plants do quite well in this brave new world. And in many other cases, so-called invasives are doing much better. So what does invasive mean? Is it perhaps a synonym for successful? We're never going to be able to go out and control wildlife. The nature of nature has never been static, has never been this Disney-esque world of these 18 perfect native plants. It's always had immigrants coming in and settling and changing the landscape and improving the diversity. The best research I've read on, quote, invasive plants shows that when they first show up, like invasive insects, they make a huge impact that can be somewhat negative. But then over time, they kind of settle in and the other plants around them learn to live with them and figure out their weaknesses. And so this is the world we live in, a world of constant change. Nature is an engine of change. And I can remember an old friend of mine who's a butterfly breeder. We were doing a show together and somebody asked him, how do I get more butterflies to my garden? And he goes, well, there's 3 plants you can use to attract butterflies. Mm-hmm. Butterfly bush, and butterfly bush.
Huh.
And as you note, maybe the plant does not feed caterpillars. Maybe it's not a host plant for any caterpillars.
No, it's not caterpillars, but a nectar plant.
It is a tremendous nectar plant. Its abundance of flowers is very important to monarchs who really have to fuel up. with large amounts of pollen and nectar to make that massive migration at the end of the season. I have the same bad plant in my own garden.
And, oh, you make me feel better about myself,
and,
Mike.
Well, you had me at Native Bees, honey. I mean, anybody who's out there admiring the different types of bumblebees, the big burly ones, the more delicate ones with the kind of yellow stoles throwing over their shoulders.
Oh, I have orchard mason bees out there. Ooh.
Oh, and the tiny little cylindrical golden gossamer ones with these Tinkerbell.
You can hear them. You can actually hear them in the butterfly bush.
So I think it's a world where we need more plants, not less. Nobody's going to improve the environment by spraying herbicides around or killing things. Nature will find a way to utilize these plants. These plants will find a way to fit in. And anytime we're feeding bees and butterflies, we're trying to make the future better.
Okay.
All right. So you have
I asked your opinion, and thank you, Mike. It's a good, honest one.
Yeah, you have my blessing.
All right.
Now I'll get in trouble for this, too.
You probably will, but the discussion needs to be had about immigrants' plants.
Yes. Welcome the stranger, I heard someone say.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Well, have a wonderful new year, Mike.
You too, and have a good season next year.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who's getting a cut tree this Christmas to have a bow saw at the ready. Cut an extra inch off the bottom of the stump and then plunge that cut stump into a big bucket of lukewarm water for 24 hours before you set the tree up, unless you want a new carpet of sharp green drop needles. But don't go taking that dried out tree back down yet, because we'll be right back to deter deer and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week: how to control the deer that are destroying young plants by rubbing their antlers against them, or the deer that are eating our azaleas and arborvitae, or the deer that are running in front of our Acuras. We'll try and cover all of those deer topics after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, John. How are you, sir?
So far, so good, Mike. How you doing?
I am just ducky, thank you. And where is John so far, so good?
I live right on the edge of State College, Pennsylvania, and Bowlesburg.
Okay.
Born and raised down near you, West Oak Lane, East Germantown, Philadelphia.
Very nice area. What can we do for you, John?
Mike, I'm concerned about a rhododendron tree or plant that I have out in front of the house that's about, as far as I can estimate, maybe 35 to 44 years old. It's a beautiful, gigantic specimen, 19 feet wide, 13 high, 11 deep. And it's always magnificent in the spring. We like to sit out in front of it. And this last year and the year before, it seems to be fading. It seems like it's starting to die a little bit. I'm getting some dead growth here and there. And so I'm just wondering if it's just the end of the line for it or if there's something I can do for it.
It should not be the end of the line. What they need is soil that drains well and an acid soil, a soil with high acidity. If their soil starts to get a little neutral or even alkaline, then they'll start to lose the greenness of their leaves. The leaves won't be that kind of dark green. They'll be a little more yellowish, and the plant won't seem as healthy. So the first thing you do before you do any kind of panic is even now, even in as we're approaching like the dead of winter, I want you to get a big brick of milled peat moss. Hopefully you can find one in a garden center that's not frozen solid out there. And spread an inch or two of the milled peat moss all around the base of the plant as a mulch. And cover that with an inch of compost. So it's growing near a lawn, I presume?
Yeah, it's out in front of the house. It's kind of facing northeast, so it's, you know, in shade, you know, half the day in the summer. It's always been very healthy.
Yeah. Now, do you treat the lawn for anything? Do you use herbicides? Do you use fertilizers? Have you limed it?
Nothing.
Okay, good. Continue to do nothing. Just leave your clippings on the lawn. And like I said, this sounds like an easy one. Just an inch of milled peat moss to bring the acidity level to a number that the rhododendron likes, somewhere between 5.5 and 6. And then cover that with compost for two things. First, it'll help the acidity of the peat moss become more available to the plant more quickly. It'll also give the plant a gentle feeding, but not a forced feeding like with chemical fertilizers. It'll allow the plant to kind of pick and choose what it wants. If you can't find milled peat moss, you can probably find bags of Hollytone at the store. They may not have the big bricks of peat moss or may not want to get them out of storage, but they'll probably sell you a bag of Hollytone. And you could do the same thing. That's a natural fertilizer that acidifies the soil. You would spread like a cup or two of Hollytone around this monster plant and then cover that with compost. Now, I will mention that the people who make Hollytone Espoma are underwriters of the show, but that can't prevent me from recommending it every once in a while because this is an organic product, a natural product that goes back, geez, close to 100 years at this point, and it's very safe for use around plants.
Sure, no worries. You know, one thing I did do, though, I put an extra gutter downspout in and put that water out onto the lawn because at times when we would have a real serious downpour, if the gutter backed up, it would come over like kind of a waterfall and it would soak and maybe, you know, come into the house. So I moved the water away from it. Would that have something to do with it maybe?
Yes. Azaleas and rhododendrons are two of the thirstiest plants in our landscape. In the case of azaleas and rhododendrons, they really want a deep watering once a week, especially in the summertime. I still think it's a good idea for you to have rerouted the gutters, but now if we go a week without rain, let a hose drip at the base of the plant for a couple of hours early in the morning, one day, once a week in the summer, anytime we don't get rain.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, so take good care of that rhododendron, John.
Mike, thanks for all the advice. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Dwight, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being had, Dwight. Where are you, man?
I'm in Springfield, Ohio.
Excellent. Do you get us on broadcast out there?
Yeah, we're at WYSO is our member station, 91.3.
All right. What can we do for you, Dwight?
I was asking a question about mums. We bought some that were potted for the fall, of course, and then they have died off. And I wondered if it was possible to save any of the roots during the winter, or if I could bring them inside and then bring them back outside next year, and if so, how?
The answer is maybe, but not inside. Now, do you have any outside ground?
Yes, we do. We have a front yard, and we have some mums that someone planted that own the house before us that come up annually that are beautiful.
Okay.
I just don't know how to plant the ones we buy, when to put them in, all that good stuff.
Well, the answer to when to put them in would have been right before your first killing frost, which I presume you've had one or two of by now.
Yes, we have.
Okay. The mums are pretty hardy plants, but they're not going to survive in pots with their roots above ground like that. And keeping them alive in the, quote, unheated garage is a lot harder than it sounds. The easiest thing you can do, and you have two options here, both of which involve just digging a hole someplace, and it doesn't have to be where you want the mums to end up, but it should be an area that gets good sun. And then your choice is if you want to replant them in the spring, if you want to think about this some more, about where they're going to go, you can just drop the pot into the hole. The whole secret of this is to get the roots below the soil line.
Okay.
But if you know where you want them to go, then dig a hole and just plant them in the ground at the same level they are in the pot. Don't refill the hole with anything fancy. Just refill the hole, any portion of it, with the same soil you took out. And then if the plants have survived these couple of frosts, which they should, in the spring, they'll start to green up. When they green up, cut them back, get rid of most of the old growth. And then if you want that real mummy look, you really have to keep pinching them back and preventing the flowers from forming early in the season. I mean, if you don't do this, you'll still get flowers. It just won't look, you know, like that crazy shower cap thing that you get in, you know, from the florists in the fall.
I appreciate you clarifying. When you said mummy look, I was thinking bands of cloth.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Imhotep. Yeah. But the look of mums in the fall in garden centers and is very artificial.
Sure.
We did a bit on the show years ago that fascinated me because it was the opposite of what I thought would be true. We had a listener ask about how do nurseries grow mums and get that tight headed flower look because she got tired of pinching them every week. And it turns out that commercial mum production is one of the last things to really use intensive human labor in horticulture because there's no machine that can shear them or work them. The best mums have had humans pinching them off every couple of weeks during the growing season. That is the biggest expense in growing these plants commercially is the cost of the human hands doing the pinching.
Right.
You don't have to be really compulsive, but if you keep at it, you pinch them back every couple of weeks, you'll get a really tight head. If you just let them grow, but it's very important you give them a good shearing back in the spring after new growth. Go ahead.
After you see the green, then you cut the old stems off and let the new ones thrive, is what you're saying?
Yeah, you can even do it in stages. You can, when you see the first green, you can take off the old brown stuff on top, let it grow a little bit more, and then you can give it another shearing, let it grow a little bit more, and you can even take off a little bit of the green.
But it isn't too late at this point. As long as I dig a hole and plant them where they're the same depth as they were in the pot, and then I'm good and just wait for them in the spring and do the steps you've talked about.
It should not be too late. But if it is and they don't green up in the spring, you just pull them out of the ground and compost them. And next year you get them in the ground a little bit earlier. It's really easy peasy.
Makes sense.
Yeah, the important thing is don't shear them now. And, you know, after that, they are winter hardy. They should do fine.
Excellent.
All right,
Thanks,
Dwight?
Mike. All right.
All right, you take care, sir.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Deer, a threat to cars, trees, and people. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started by reading this week's very important question.
Sure, Mike. Connie in Reston, Virginia writes, I love your show, and I'm hoping you can help my debarked pine trees. The trees are about 5 feet tall, were planted last year, and have been debarked, most likely by a deer, about 2 to 3 feet above ground. The scars are about a foot wide. In your expert opinion, what is the best way to save my trees? Any ideas on how I can prevent this in the future? Your precious time is appreciated. Precious time? Expert opinion? Gag me. If they knew you like I do.
Hey, come on. I have actually read portions of some of the books of the authors we've interviewed on the show.
Terry Gross and her Fresh Air staff read all of the books.
Terry doesn't have pinball machines in her house. They're like cars. You can't just let them sit there. Anyway, this has been an epic year for deer, and not in a good way.
Right, and that's no joke. They really don't like your car this season.
First, I'm driving in Pittsburgh on my way to give a keynote at the fabulous Phipps Conservatory, and something goes mad wrong for the car in front of me, and I wind up driving over top of the deer they hit. Then I get back to the east coast of Pennsylvania. I'm driving on a busy state road at rush hour, and a deer decides to run into traffic in front of my car. That's what I get for not following the guy in front of me too close. Luckily, my deductible was only $100 because I hit a deer and not another car or a tree.
I seem to remember a question about trees.
You know, I'm fine. Thanks. Thanks for your concern. Anyway, young male deer, quote, velvet the fur-like covering off of their newly emerged antlers by rubbing those horny parts against trees, which can do a lot of damage, especially to, quote, newly planted trees, which in this case is pretty much going to mean anything less than 3 to 5 years in the ground.
Didn't Connie send photos? What did they show?
A line of really sad-looking little trees that were left unprotected out in the open and thus destined to either be rubbed to death by horny bucks or nibbled on by deer of both sexes, rabbits, mice, voles, and or other miserable munchers. Now, if the antler rubbing removed a complete circle around the trunk, that tree is doomed. And any trees that do survive are going to look really sad. I'd plan on replacing them all in the spring.
Right. The bark on young trees is really soft and fragile, and much more edible than the bark on older, more mature trees. But what can you do? Caging them would be so ugly.
Boy, it wouldn't look any uglier than these trees without their middles. Now, you could try and protect the trees with deer repellent. You'd spray it down low to discourage the smaller vermin. Just remember to account for snow. If you get a foot of snow on the ground, rabbits are going to start a foot up. Then you'd spray at browsing height, about 3 feet off the ground, to discourage nimbling by Bambi and the bucks.
But would repellent repel antler rubbers?
No, and there's the rub. Unless you install real deer fencing to protect the entire property, you really do have to cage new young plants. Look for fencing that's coated with green vinyl or spray painted green so it blends in. Or drive some stakes into the ground and wrap burlap around the stakes. That'll protect those new plants from desiccating winter winds as well as browsing and rubbing.
But mice and voles could still squeeze in to get at the tender bark down low.
So you're going to also need to use hardware cloth or deer repellent down low. And, you know, next year is guaranteed to be worse.
You have been warning people that the huge nut drops being reported from all over the country are going to fuel mammal pest populations.
Deer, mice, voles, rabbits all thrive when oak trees produce a lot of acorns, which our listeners have reported happening in droves. Same with hickory nuts. Massive amounts of black walnuts that also seem to be dropping everywhere are mostly going to bolster the evil squirrel population. But those menaces to mankind are mostly just a nuisance, while deer and mice destroy landscapes and foster an increased number of disease-carrying ticks.
And the takeaway?
Well, you know, like we've been stressing, you gotta clean up this forest food and trash it. Or, as one listener discussed in our soon-to-be legendary all-black walnut show a couple of weeks back, you could also bury it, especially acorns. Acorns mean more deer, more mice, and more ticks.
And, you know, deer hitting cars is no joke. People die. Is there any way you can avoid it?
Drive with your brights on whenever you're alone on the road. Deer's eyes are very reflective, and you're going to have more time to react that way. If you see one deer on the road, slow down, stop, or pull over. Odds are good that others are coming. And try to avoid driving at dawn and dusk if possible. Both of my Prius Punishers pounced at twilight. Hey, wait a minute. Brett Rader. associate producer of Production Association here at You Bet Your Garden. What are you doing in the studio, man?
Got some cookies.
What kind of cookies?
Black walnuts.
Black walnut cookies? Did you make these from one of our listeners' recipes?
I found a recipe on Google.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, am I allowed to try one here, Brett?
Come
on, come
on. There's plenty.
Wow. Well, they look good. Do they taste good? Wow.
I like them.
It's kind of interesting. They almost taste like there's almost yogurt in them. Mm-hmm. They have that.
There's butter in them.
Oh, butter? Lots of butter?
Yeah, come on. There's lots of butter in these.
Plenty of butter, plenty of sugar, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, the walnuts have a really distinctive taste.
Yeah. A little tangy. Mm-hmm.
Luckily, mine have so much butter in it, I can't get through to it. Those weren't bad cookies. Well, that sure was some great information about trying to divert deer from doing damage, now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. All right, now the sound may not be perfect right here because I'm out on the road. My producer requested that I meet her out in farm country at sunset. And hey, why are my headlights not working? Yikes, we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. And please include your location, especially if you are certain that we don't need it. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find the answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. We continue to send get well wishes to Elizabeth Perez Luna, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter continues to play our theme song. Our parole officer, sweet Steven Naomi Sterobin, seems to have been granted a pardon. Our engineer, Al Banks, is still waiting for that call from the governor. Our social media director, Amanda McGrath, wants a new lawyer. Assisting the authorities with their inquiries are webmasters Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz. Arresting Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our head chairman, associate producer of Production Association, and chief black walnut cookie baker is Brett Rader. Our incorruptible intern is Robert Fogarty. Corruptible Al Banks is our editor. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'm taking the fifth until I see you again next week. You know, actually, if it's going to be a whole week, I might want more than a fifth. Now, let's see, a bottle of red wine is 750 milliliters divided by five. Now, that still leaves. I don't want to hear it. There's a new pest in town. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll try and deal with a hard-to-control vinegar fly that wants to ruin your raspberries and besmirch your blueberries, plus your besmirched phone calls.